Dryden shook his head. That's impossible.
So, Kira said positively, let's come up with some other options, other ideas that we might...
What about unrefined? Han blurted out. Everyone stared at him. No one spoke.
What had he done?
Kira read the room quickly. Chewie, the Wookiee who had attached himself to Han, or probably the other way around, looked at him as if he were speaking a new language. Beckett looked shocked but disbelieving, as if Han were a child who'd offer to go on a diplomatic mission to the Emperor, which was pretty close to the truth. Most important, there was Dryden. Here was a man who hated being interrupted, especially when he had a good rage going. Kira could do it, of course, but she did it with a touch and soft statements. Dryden looked at Han like he was already in the crosshairs, and he just had to decide exactly where to shoot him to obliterate him. No one spoke, and Han sat there looking uncertain, like he had said something out of the blue without any planning behind it. Kira sighed inwardly. Actually, he had done exactly that. Just like old times. She cleared her throat and spoke up to save his sorry butt, hoping to keep Dryden's attention from burning Han to a cinder. The only known source of astatic coaxium is the fissure vent discovered beneath the spice mines on Kessel, she said thoughtfully. Han eagerly grabbed the lifeline she had thrown him and acted as if the plan had been there from the start. He nodded eagerly and said, Yeah, Kessel. That's the one I was thinking of. A very, very good one. Behind Beckett, Chewie was shaking his head, clearly begging him to stop going down this black hole from which there was no escape. Han shrugged slightly. She knew that shrug. He had started in a direction, and there was no going back. Nothing to do now but charge ahead. He probably thought it was his only chance, and was trying to save Beckett in a stupid, clumsy way. In all fairness, Dryden had been about to kill Beckett, and he probably would have taken care of Han and Chewie soon after. However, Kira would have been able to stop Dryden. Beckett was completely safe. Probably. Dryden was watching all of them. Was he waiting for more insights from her? Beckett to tell Han his plan was crazy? Han to continue piecing together an impossibility? She calmed slightly. The fact that Dryden was considering this as a reasonable plan meant he hadn't really wanted to kill them. Of course, when he was in a rage, he didn't always do what his logical mind wanted. But he was calm now, tapping his chin and thinking. He finally shook his head.
The Pikes control Kessel, he said. Crimson Dawn has a fragile alliance with them. We can't jeopardize that without risking another war among the syndicates, which I will not do.
Dryden had made his decision and plucked his laser-bladed knife off the table beside him. He stood and loomed over them, waiting for their last words.
But we don't have any alliance with the Pikes, Beckett said quickly.
Han picked up the thread.
And nobody's ever gonna know we're working for you.
Dryden turned to Kira, as he had done so often in the past few years. He raised an eyebrow.
Possible.
She had to give it to Han for innovation, but she had to be honest here. It was a crazy notion.
Risky, she finally said. As soon as the raw coaxium is removed from the thermal vault, it'll start to destabilize. Unless,
Han said, urging her on. Unless? Work with me here.
Unless you find somewhere to process it fast, Kira continued.
Kira had taken some time to learn more about the substance that had ultimately separated her from Han and put her on the path to working with the Crimson Dawn. If she knew about anything, it was coaxium. It had been her idea for Dryden to hire someone to rob the Imperial Conveyix, after all. The men stumbled for a moment, trying to think if Coaxium Refinery's not under Imperial control. But then the Wookiee made a moaning, barking sound.
He's saying, Savareen?
Han translated.
Savareen! There's an old refinery on Savareen,
Beckett said.
It's remote. Doesn't fall under Imperial jurisdiction yet.
Dryden knew the place.
Very cooperative people, the Savarians. But Kira's right. You won't have time to make it there before those canisters explode. You'd need an incredibly fast ship and a brilliant pilot.
Han shrugged.
We'll get the ship.
Then he pointed at himself and grinned.
We've already got the pilot.
Kira struggled to keep her face straight. She'd grown up a lot in the previous years, and she thought Han might have. However, it seemed he was just as impetuous as always, but showing her disbelief wouldn't help at all. Han was a good pilot, even when he misjudged the size of a space to slip through, Kira thought, as she remembered the escape from Moloch on Corellia. She was prepared to defend his piloting skills if Dryden asked her, but instead, he burst out laughing, suddenly delighted at this young pilot's clearly unearned confidence. The entire room relaxed a bit as the murderous glint left his eyes. Beckett laughed too, a bit nervously. Dryden turned to him and said,
"He is hungry and arrogant. I like that."
Beckett nodded like he had brought Han to Dryden on purpose. Dryden turned to Kira with a thoughtful look on his face.
"What do you say, my dear? Do you think your friend can do what needs to be done?"
Han glanced her way, silently pleading. They had exchanged this look so many times as children.
"Come on, bail me out. When you need something, I've got your back."
Only she'd interrupted Lady Proxima's wrath, allowing them to escape, and he had left her on Corellia. He already owed her. But they didn't keep score. He had gotten her out of her own numerous scrapes. She nodded slowly and smiled.
"Yes, I believe he can."
"Good,"
Dryden said, clapping his hands together once, as if shaking his own hands on a deal with himself.
"Then it's all settled."
He got up, looked sidelong at her, and said,
"You'll go with them, of course, to make sure everything goes smoothly."
"All right." He said it almost as an aside, but Kira knew that he had planned it from the beginning. Her face froze in a slight smile.
"Of course,"
she said, thinking hard. Dryden trusted her. They'd gotten past the mistrust part of their relationship a while ago. He knew she wouldn't, couldn't betray him. And Han would need her, of course. That much was obvious.
"All right,"
Dryden repeated, as if approving a pleasure trip. He seemed buoyant again, having made plans that would be lucrative to him while not dirtying his hands at all, as usual. He walked to the window, sidestepping the shattered crystal on the floor as if it were no more than a puddle of spilled water. He looked into the golden sunset and smiled.
"I feel great about this," he said. "I'll see you all on Savareen." "Savareen it is."
Beckett matched his jovial tone, getting to his feet. Han and Chewie edged toward the door, unsure if they'd been dismissed, but clearly eager to leave Dryden's private den of mercurial emotions.
"Oh, and Tobias,"
Dryden said over his shoulder. Beckett froze halfway between sitting and standing.
"You do realize if you fail again, we'll all be out of options, right?"
The threat hung in the air between them all, like a loaded weapon no one wanted to pick up.
"We won't,"
Beckett assured him, and they finally made their polite escape. They headed for the door, back stiff, and Han walked by a glass bell that held what Dryden called his guests. They had the look of taxidermied creatures, but Kira knew what they were. And now Han did too. He watched, horrified, as one creature quivered slightly and then froze again. She placed her hand on his arm to guide him out the door.
"Shall we?"
she asked, squeezing his elbow tight. He nodded and followed her. She couldn't blame him. She remembered the moment she had realized that, given Dryden's wrath, one could end up in a fate worse than death. Literally. Kira said she needed to prepare some things for travel and would meet them at the weapons check. Han struggled with the complex emotions regarding bringing her with them. First, the surprise that she was alive, not to mention second in command to a crime lord, was still fresh. And then, there were his old feelings for her, rushing in behind it. He was delighted she was coming with them, but he worried for her well-being. And a tiny part of him, all right, a big part, was irritated that when Dryden said jump, she was already crouched and ready to go. Beckett distracted Han from all of this when he laid into Han the moment they entered the lift.
"I should shoot you the minute I get a hold of a gun," he said, pushing Han against the wall. "What were you thinking?"
"I was thinking a crazy guy was about to kill you and we needed a distraction," Han said.
"A distraction is spilling your drink, or breaking a glass, or pushing over one of his suits of armor,"
Beckett said.
"It's not giving him a promise we have no chance at fulfilling."
"What's the big deal?" "You heard Kira. We get a ship, go to Kessel, get the coaxium, haul ourselves to Savarine, refine the stuff, and boom, the debt is paid," Han said.
"Do you have a ship? Have you even been to Kessel? Have you ever traveled with coaxium?"
Beckett demanded. Han's ears popped, distracting him.
"No, but Kira said she had a line on a ship. And if it's fast enough, we don't need to worry about the unrefined coaxium. And what's the big deal with Kessel?"
Beckett rubbed his forehead.
"The big deal? Kessel lies in a maelstrom. Electrical storms, planet-sized carbon bergs, and more. Put aside the fact that we'll be going to a dangerous mine to steal a very expensive commodity, it's not a place you just fly in and out of."
Han hadn't known that, of course. He kind of wished someone had told him. But even then, what would they have done? It was die in Dryden's study, or end up like that prisoner Han had seen on his way out the door, or die trying to pay off the debt. At least this way, they were actively doing something.
"We'll be fine,"
he said at last. "We will just take it one thing at a time." Chewbacca, who had watched all of this silently, made a low moaning sound.
"Exactly,"
Han said. "We'll worry about Kessel after we get the ship." Chapter 12. Kira knew a guy. Han figured they would have to go to the guy, perhaps by getting a ride on the sweet star yacht. He didn't want to spend more time with Dryden Voss than he had to, but he admittedly did want to spend more time on that yacht. However, the guy was much closer than he realized. Han kept going over those words as they exited the yacht's gangway and crossed the rope bridges to Fort Ipso. It turned out the guy was a few hundred meters away, in the bowels of the fort, which was the opposite of Dryden's luxury yacht in every way possible. Han was pretty sure he could still hear the ethereal sounds of the music high above them as he entered the fort. The first thing they encountered was a number of different species drinking at a poorly lit bar, many of them obviously armed, and many of them talking about the crash of the Convex. Chewie gave a low growl, not happy with the surroundings. The patrons lurking over their drinks reciprocated the sentiment, many of them directing hostile looks at the newcomers. Beckett didn't pay any attention to those glaring at them, or to the voices floating over to them about the lost coaxium and the botched job, or the idiots who were destroyed by Enfys Nest. Han bristled, and Chewie turned and stared at the speaker, but Kira led them past the bar and downstairs into an even darker, smokier pit. A loud noise from a side room distracted him, and he stopped to watch what looked like a droid cage match. Spectators of all species were placing bets and cheering as two droids grappled. Each one had at least three arms extended, grasping, tearing, and burning. One managed to grab the other and slam it forcefully against the cage. Arms went flying, torches guttered out, and the crowd roared. Credits changed hands, a punch was thrown, and they left the room as more cheering, this time for a different fight, started. In the corner stood a droid, leaning against the wall like a person. Han couldn't place its make. It was bipedal like a protocol or domestic droid, but its head was dome-shaped like an astromech. "So your guy is here?" Han asked Kira, trying to keep the disbelief from his voice.
"He's the best smuggler around," she said. "He slipped through the Empire's fingers more times than anyone alive."
She paused and read the several emotions crossing Han's face.
"He's also very attractive. Not just handsome, but sophisticated. He has impeccable taste, and..."
She paused, as if searching for words.
"Charisma. Not to mention, he's prodigious..."
"We get the idea," Han interrupted.
"He's retired now,"
Kira said, changing topics.
"Calls himself a sportsman."
"All we need is his ship," Han said, not wanting to hear more of this guy's biography.
"He'll never part with it. Loves that ship. He won it, playing..."
She paused as they entered another smoky room.
"Sabacc."
A conversation drifted to their ears.
"How was I supposed to know she was an Imperial spy? I thought she loved me."
Chuckles and grunts rippled around the table. A number of species filled the Sabacc table where, Han assumed, a card game had just ended. The spectators watched the table almost as eagerly as the ones watching the droid battle. Kira gently, but assertively, parted the crowd to get to the front lines. At the far end of the table, facing them, was the man who had told the story about the spy. He had dark skin, with a trimmed beard, a lazy smile, and sharp, intelligent eyes. He slouched in his chair in a perfect illusion of disinterest, but Han suspected he was very aware of everything around him. His suspicions were confirmed when his eyes turned straight to Kira as he snaked out his hand and pulled his latest winnings across the table. The man was dressed in the brightest colors in the room. Where everyone else wore shades of brown and gray and blue, this guy had on a perfectly tailored shirt in a brilliant shade of yellow. Draped on the chair behind him was a cape. A cape! And he managed to make it look good. Han wondered if he and Dryden Voss had the same tailor. "That's the guy, huh?" Han asked over Kira's shoulder. He glanced to the side and saw her smiling with clear pleasure at just seeing the man. "He's got an interesting style."
"I'll say,"
she said, not trying to discuss the hunger in her voice.
"There's no one in the galaxy like Lando Calrissian."
The world was spinning away from him, and Han grabbed onto the one thing he understood.
"You say he won his ship?" he asked thoughtfully.
"I can take him. Let me at him."
She turned to him, face closing down to focus seriously. She shook her head.
"Han, no. No, absolutely not. I know what you're thinking, and it's a terrible idea."
"Hey, when we were kids and played Corellian Spike, who was the best in the den?"
"We were kids. These guys are serious gamblers."
"I'm serious. Stake me."
Han felt confident for the first time since he had suggested they waltz into a maelstrom and steal a very volatile substance. 100 credits should do it. Chewie groaned and shook his head, but Han ignored him. Kira glared at him, looked at the table, and then sighed and nodded. "You won't regret this," Han said. "I promise." Kira and Chewie faded into the crowd as Han joined the game. He told them he couldn't have them at his back fretting while he played.
"Is this seat taken?"
he asked, stepping up to the table. The only other human at the table, Lando, looked up.
"If nobody's in the seat, it ain't taken, friend."
He sat down, showing eager naivete.
"So, this is Sabacc?"
he asked, mispronouncing it Sabacc.
"Sabacc,"
Lando corrected, gathering the cards.
"Sabacc,"
Han repeated.
"Got it." "You play before?"
Lando asked, dealing out the 2 cards. Han nodded.
"Couple of times, yeah." "Captain Lando Calrissian."
"Han Solo."
He gestured to Lando's winnings.
"Looks like you're having a good day."
Lando just grinned.
"Can I ask you a question, Captain Calrissian?"
"Anything,
Han,"
Lando said, deliberately mispronouncing it to sound like hand, the same way Han had deliberately mispronounced Sabacc. "It's Han, but that's okay," he said, smiling.
"I heard a story about you. I was wondering if it was true."
Lando never really lost the smile that curled on his mouth like a satisfied feline. But this time the feline stretched, and Lando smiled wider. A floating weight droid came up behind him and filled his upraised glass.
"Everything you've heard about me is true,"
Lando said deliberately, and then looked behind him to the droid.
"Thanks, love."
It was odd to thank a droid for a drink. This was already an odd guy.
"Heard you won your ship playing cards,"
Han said.
"I've won a lot of things,"
Lando said, nodding. He took a long drink.
"I once won a subtropical moon in the Ocean Belt. Turned out to be a real money pit. Still, I enjoyed winning it."
"I'm impressed,"
Han said, taking his own drink and not looking at Lando.
"I don't think I'd have the nerve to gamble with something I love as much as my ship."
Lando's interest in him became more focused, and Han wouldn't have seen it if he wasn't looking for it.
"What do you fly?"
VCX-100,
Han said, naming a ship he'd seen 100 times in the shipyards back home. He looked at his cards and took another one, dropping a credit on the table. The effect was instant. The other gamblers exclaimed in their own languages, and Lando whistled low.
"That is a quality ship,"
Han shrugged modestly.
"Fastest in the galaxy, but there are a lot of great ships out there. I'm sure yours is very nice."
"Gets me where I'm going,"
Lando said stiffly. They finished the hand, and Han placed his cards on the table. He'd managed to balance his 4 cards out to 0, with the best hand at the table. He grinned.
"Beginner's luck."
"Well played,"
Lando allowed, and the game continued. Han lost a few hands to get the read on the players around him, and then began winning in earnest to his outward astonishment. He kept his conversation minimal, asking rules questions here and there, ordering around for the table. He had to get in there and establish himself. The other gamblers were happy to have someone new to take credits from, but as he started winning, the faces became more and more hostile. His goal was simply to outlast the others at the table. Lando didn't strike him as a quitter, and he was clearly in it for the fun, but he didn't lose very often. Which made sense, as winning was fun. Han leaned back to relax, mimicking the same mien of pleased disinterest that Lando had. Once Han had dangled something as nice as a ship in front of Lando, the game had heated up. They rolled, gave up hands, and drew with more and more intensity. The stakes grew higher and higher, until everyone had dropped out, except Han and Lando. The pot consisted of everything Han owned, that Kira had loaned him, and everything that had been in front of Lando mingled with it. Conversation had stopped. The only sounds in the room were various breathing apparatuses. All eyes were on the game, waiting to see what would happen with the final hand. Lando had watched Han as much as he had looked at his cards. He never lost his smile. Finally, he said,
"You're bluffing. I'm gonna call."
Han gestured to the empty space in front of Lando.
"With what? Your scarf isn't my style."
"You don't have a style, Han," Lando said.
Then he said,
"My ship against your ship."
Han had caught him. Even the breathing sounds stopped as everyone in the room held their breath. He kept the glee internal as he pretended to think about it, letting the tension build. Then he shrugged, as if it really didn't matter to him.
"Sure. What the hell?"
He laid his cards on the table and sat back.
"Straight staves."
The crowd erupted, not expecting such a good hand. Only one in the game would beat it, and that was impossible, since Han was certain both of the key cards, the green Cyclops, were in the discard pile. Hands, human and alien, pounded him on the back, and he grinned, meeting Kira's eyes in triumph. Lando chuckled, shaking his head.
"You dog, you played me. You are good, very good."
Han beamed.
"Thanks," he said, moving to take his winnings.
"Whoa, whoa, whoa,"
Lando said, putting his hands, manicured and soft, on top of Han's.
"I said you were good, but not good enough."
He put his own cards on the table and spread them out to remove any doubt. Two tens, two negative tens, and a green Cyclop. The zero card that broke ties.
"Pure sabacc."
The room seemed to swirl around Han as the crowd went crazy. This time in Lando's direction. He stared at the cards, hoping he wasn't seeing what was in front of him. Lando leaned back again, hands behind his head, grinning at his triumph, having unseated the young upstart.
"It was impossible," Han wanted to object, to claim that the last green Cyclops card couldn't have been in Lando's hand.
But objectors had been ignored all night, and Han hadn't listened to them. Now he wondered if they were on to something. He knew Lando couldn't have won without a trick or two, but he couldn't call him a cheater outright. He would just have to think of another way to get Lando's ship. Kira fumed. Han had lost everything, and an imaginary ship on top of it. She didn't think Lando Calrissian dealt with cheaters the way Dryden Vos did, but she also didn't relish telling this man that they did not, in fact, have the ship he thought he had won. She wondered how Han expected to get out of this one. They rushed from the table, but Lando didn't let them go far. They stood outside the gladiator droid pit room as he approached, grinning.
"So, where's my VCX?"
He put delicious emphasis on the word "my." Kira expected it was one of his favorite words ever. Han looked over his shoulder and gave a tentative grin.
I don't have it here with me right now. It's in the shop."
"Uh-huh,"
Lando said. He took it in stride, nodding to let Han know he would forgive this slight, but Han still owed him a ship. He turned the full force of his charm on Kira, his voice dropping at least one octave to purr.
"Kira, my love."
Kira smiled back, returning the flirtation and enjoying watching Han's spine stiffen. He was far too easy to manipulate.
Yes, Lando.
I'm so sorry to have been neglecting you all this time.
He paused to take in her outfit. She had changed from her slinky black cocktail dress into a more sensible white jacket and black pants, but always had fashion in mind. Her years wearing rags and stolen clothes had given her enough of a taste of poverty that she never wanted to relax in anything but the best.
Looking phenomenal as ever,
Lando said, recognizing her efforts.
What are you doing with...
He waved vaguely at Han and Chewie, who looked uncomfortable.
Harry and the boy.
They work for me,
she said. He nodded, understanding.
Hard to find good help.
Han stepped forward. Actually, we're more like partners. Kira overrode him. He'd had his chance, and he had blown it.
We're making a new move. Making the Kessel Run. We need a ship.
Lando looked delighted.
Kessel? Why didn't you just say so?
Kira reached out and touched his face, running her finger along his jaw. He half closed his eyes like a satisfied pet. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Han wince. He would never understand her way of doing things. Probably because he had been on the wrong end of her ways far too often to recognize when they were used as a tool.
I heard you were retired,
she explained to Lando.
Circumstances change, darling,
Lando said, his dark eyes drinking her in.
You know I'm too young and too good to retire.
How much?
She asked, getting down to business, but leaving the seductive purr to her voice. Lando thought for a moment.
Kessel Run. That's no easy spin. So, half.
What? Han snapped, stepping forward. Ridiculous. At the same time, the Wookiee roared his own outrage.
Wonderful,
she thought.
He's just like Han.
25%,
said a voice behind them. Beckett walked toward them, with a canvas bag slung over his shoulder. Lando took in the newcomer with surprise.
You're Tobias Beckett,
he said, shaking Beckett's hand.
You killed Aurra Sing.
I pushed her,
Beckett corrected modestly.
Pretty sure the fall killed her.
Kira had heard this story. It had made Dryden very happy, that job. He'd given Beckett a bonus.
However it happened, Lando said. You did the galaxy a favor that day. Me in particular. I owed her a lot of credits. So as a token of my gratitude, I'll do it for 40%.
Beckett didn't blink.
25,
he repeated. Han twitched behind him, clearly wanting to step in, not wanting to lose this guy again. Kira sent him a warning look. She'd hooked Lando. Beckett would reel him in. Han didn't need to get brash and clumsy again.
25?
Works,
Lando said. He smiled, as if he were the one coming out ahead here. The shouting in the gladiator room increased, and Lando looked past Han in concern.
She never learns, he said.
Who?
Han asked.
My first mate, he said.
Heading into the Fuhrer. They followed him to see a modified bipedal astromech hanging onto the net outside the cage, shouting at the droids fighting. Kira had peeked into the droid cage match, as Han had when they had first gone by. She'd watched with dismay as two perfectly workable droids tore each other apart. It was a huge waste.
Really?
The droid yelled.
Again? This is disgusting!
One of the fighters swiveled its head her way as its owner checked it for needed repairs.
Don't you see they're just using you for entertainment? You've been neurowashed! Don't just blindly follow your programming! Exercise a little free will!
The crowd had noticed her and started to boo and throw little bits of food and litter her way. She raised one arm over her head and started chanting,
Droid rights! droid rights! We are sentient! Stop exploiting droids!
The fight promoter paused from taking bets, clearly having had enough. He approached the shouting droid.
All right, you bucket of bolts! I've heard about enough out of you!
The droid whirled to face him.
How about I fight you? How about that?
The man, a short white human with grease markings on his face and hair, sneered at her.
Bring it!
He said, and then stopped speaking because he had a droid hand clamped over his face. Kira smiled. This was a droid who refused to be programmed for subservience. She admired that.
L3, Lando said sharply. She didn't move to release the man, but her head swiveled around to look at Lando.
Lando raised his eyebrows and said gently, as if talking to a misbehaving child,
Let go of the mean man's face. We're leaving.
They don't even serve our kind here.
She sounded petulant.
No,
Lando said. She paused. Then her hand opened, and the promoter fell to the floor, gasping and holding his face. The droid walked past Kira and the others with a dismissive,
Who are these guys?
This is L337,
Lando said to them as he donned a full-length black fur coat that stood out amid all the squalor in the bar. They walked to catch up to the droid, already halfway down the hall.
We're taking them to Kessel, he added.
Oh, are we?
She asked over her shoulder.
What if I don't feel like going to Kessel?
Lando fell into step beside her.
Please don't start.
Or what? You'll have me wiped. You and I both know you couldn't get from here to Black Spire without me. And you're going to make the Kessel run?
Hey, Han said, running up to them. If she doesn't want to fly, I'll be your co-pilot.
Oh, no, no, no,
Lando said, as if this argument was nothing.
It's okay. She's definitely going.
L337 looked like she didn't know whether to be angry with Lando for pushing her around, or with Han for trying to usurp her. She focused on Lando.
Oh, why? Because you're my organic overlord?
Because I'm your captain,
Lando said, sounding as if he'd had this argument many times before.
How about that?
Then I guess it's my lucky day.
L3 said, and wandered on, muttering quietly. Lando smiled at the others.
I would have her wiped, but she's got the best damn navigational database in the galaxy.
Kira didn't believe it for a moment. Despite their bickering, Lando looked comfortably fond as he sparred verbally with the droid, watching her retreating form. He raised his voice and said pointedly,
Could use a fresh coat of paint, though.
I told you, you do not want to press that button with me.
L3 snapped, walking in an awkward way, like a two-legged insect.
Where to?
Han asked, as they exited the fort into the snowy air. Dryden's star yacht still hovered nearby, the party no doubt still going on. Kira thought about what was up there, and what would happen if she never went back. But that wasn't in the cards.
That way,
Lando said, pointing past the rope bridges.
A lot of ships around here get boosted, so, I keep my ship locked up. You know, for safety.
They emerged in a mountainside cavern protected by a heavy metal gate. Han raised an eyebrow and became more aware of why Lando was sitting in a dive bar gambling. His ship was safely hidden in an impound lot. Lando gestured to the gate.
L3, do you mind?
She walked up to the fence, and a small saw emerged from her chest. She glared back at them.
Look away. I can't do it if you're looking at me.
They all politely averted their eyes, except Lando, whose black fur and confident gaze made him look as if he were a king surveying his castle, instead of a man trying to steal back an impounded ship.
I can feel you looking at me,
L3 grumbled, and Han peeked up to see her crouched, cutting at the fence, sparks flying in every direction. Han had memories of loving his parents long ago, but they were distant and fuzzy. The teenage passion and the adult confusion he felt for Kira maybe was love, but he wasn't sure. But the thing he knew, the thing he was sure about, was that he loved the Millennium Falcon the moment he laid eyes on it. His heart lurched painfully, like it had the first time he had kissed Kira, but this was different somehow. Kira had wanted to kiss him back, and there was excitement there. Now, Han felt that as close as this ship was, its smooth shielding under his fingertips, it was parsecs away from his reach. It was the most beautiful thing he had ever seen. No other Corellian freighter had ever looked like this. Lando had poured a great deal of love, style, and money into this ship. His ship. And despair clogged Han's throat that it didn't belong to him. He didn't even think he could ever find a ship this perfect, even if he had sold all of the coaxium on Kessel. It was a light freighter, a beautiful, white, sleek ship, painted racing highlights, likely Lando's edition, and an auxiliary craft made it resemble the head of an ancient bladed weapon. It was speed. It was sleekness. It was Lando's. Lando gestured to the ship lovingly.
Here we are, my pride and joy, the Millennium Falcon.
Han cleared his throat.
Looks like you've had some work done, he said, stroking the metal shielding.
Indeed I have, Han,
Lando said, still mispronouncing his name.
2 years restoring, retrofitting, adding features. Customized flux regulator, new alluvial dampers, a wet bar.
A fortified infraction restraint on the landing gear?
Beckett added to the list from underneath, looking at the ion restraining bolt affixed to the front strut. Lando feigned surprise very poorly.
What is that doing there?
Beckett sighed.
Looks like someone fell behind on their docking fees, he said.
Do you have any experience with those?
Lando said, losing all pretense of surprise and getting down to business. Beckett chuckled.
Yeah, I'll take it off, but you're only getting 20%.
Lando thought about it, and then sighed, as if learning he'd lost a relative to a long illness. He held out a hand and put out one finger.
I don't like it.
He extended a second finger.
I don't agree with it.
Then he extended his whole hand and shook Beckett's.
But I accept it.
You're getting the hang of this, Lando,
Beckett said, pulling some tools from his canvas sack.
Come on, Chewie. Gonna need a little bit of that Wookiee oomph.
Han took a slow turn around the ship as it sped away from the Fort Ipso compound, leaving the Iridium Mountains and the coaxium debacle behind. They were leaving the atmosphere as Han entered the cockpit for the first time, feeling as if he were coming home. Lando sat relaxed in the pilot's seat, looking as comfortable as Han assumed he always did, wherever he was. The co-pilot's seat was empty. Han glanced at it, looked around, and then eased into it. The control panel sparked some pretty powerful memories in him. The lights and the sounds pulling thoughts from his mind that he hadn't considered in years.
This is a Corellian YT-1300, he said softly.
You know your stuff,
Lando said.
I've been on one before, he said. My dad worked the line at the CEC plant till he got laid off. He built these. He wanted to be a pilot, but the words trailed off.
The memories growing cloudy as he recalled the images, felt the emotions powerfully, but couldn't articulate more.
But it just didn't happen,
Lando finished for him, and Han nodded.
You and Pops close?
Han shook his head.
Yeah, me neither,
Lando said. He paused, then smiled.
My mom, on the other hand, most amazing woman I've ever known.
Han nodded and settled back, readying to tell the one story he remembered about his mother. But he jerked forward as the back of the seat was slammed from behind.
Excuse me!
It was L3, and the droid was as furious as she'd been in the cage match den.
Get this presumptuous human out of my seat!
Han scrambled up as she pushed roughly and settled in.
Sorry, Lando said. I should have warned you. She's a little territorial.
L3 made a disgruntled sound as she shifted to get comfortable.
Ah! My sacral occipital circuits are sticking. You're going to have to do that thing again later,
she said, her voice low. Lando looked unhappy, but resigned.
All right,
she said, plugging into a terminal.
The course to Kessel is set. Plugging coordinates in now. Just keep your pinky on the yoke and try not to mess anything up.
The atmosphere around the ship went from bluish-white to flat black. Lando didn't seem ruffled by the droid's irritation at all.
Whatever you say, m'lady. Just tell me when we're ready to jump.
Ready in...
L3 seemed to glitch for a moment, emitting a high-pitched whine, her dome turning seemingly against her will. She smacked her head with her hand and snapped out of it.
Ready.
What's so tricky about a jump into hyperspace? Han asked, sitting in the jump seat behind Lando. He was thinking about his Imperial training. He hadn't plotted many jumps, but he knew you fed your destination into the computer and let it figure it out for you. Then pushed a button, and then you were there.
Plenty,
Lando said.
You can't just plot a course to Kessel. Gotta thread the Cyclotta cluster and pass through the maelstrom.
That difficult? That sounds like you made it up, Han said.
Why do you think they call it the Kessel Run, when no other planet has the same connotation?
Lando asked. To help tourism? Han suggested.
You done flirting? I'm still ready,
L3 said.
You heard the lady, Lando said. You might want to buckle up, baby.
Han did so, eager to see what would happen next, but still trying to be blasé about it. Jumping to hyperspace in a gorgeous Corellian light freighter was something he did every day, in fact.
All right, punch it,
L3 said, giving Lando a little salute. Lando returned it, and together they pushed the hyperspace lever forward. The stars in front of them turned into streaks, and even though the gravitational field created by the Falcon kept them safely stable within the ship, Han still felt as if he'd been blown back. They left the planet behind them, and the only thing before them was hyperspace. Chapter 13. Once they were in hyperspace, however, it was pretty boring. L3 stayed plugged in to monitor everything. Lando got up and stretched and left the cockpit without inviting Han to follow. And there was nothing left to do. Han wandered back to the lounge, where he found Lando at a minibar mixing a drink, while Beckett and Chewbacca played a game of Dejarik holochess. Well, Beckett was playing. Chewbacca was trying, and apparently it wasn't going well.
Now think, Beckett said. Do you want to make that move? Do you want to make that move?
Chewie pressed a button, and the hologram creature shambled forward onto a new block.
You made that move, Beckett confirmed. Now I guess I will have to destroy that little guy. Somehow I never get bored with winning.
Beckett's much larger, hulking beast jumped forward, picked up Chewbacca's, and threw it to the board. Chewie howled and slammed his fist on the table, then tried to sweep the pieces off, his hairy arm passing through them.
You can't wipe them off, they're holograms, Beckett said,
his tone implying he knew that Chewie knew this, and knew it wouldn't make a difference to remind him. Chewie moaned and put his head in his hands. It was all too much. Beckett laid his hand on the Wookiee's shoulder.
You gotta learn to think 5 moves ahead, he said. Anticipate. There's a lesson to be learned here.
You guys seen Kira? Han asked. Beckett glanced over at Han and then focused on Chewie again.
People are predictable, you know.
Chewie grunted and with his head indicated the master suite, the captain's room. While the Millennium Falcon was sleek, chrome and white beauty elsewhere, the captain's quarters was where the real luxury lived. It was a love den, with romantic low light reflecting off shimmery wall hangings, low furniture, incense burning on a table in the corner, and a standalone closet of clothes in a glorious array of colors. Suits, tunics, and capes. So many capes. In front of the closet, clothed to Han's relief, stood Kira, posing in front of a mirror in one of Lando's capes. It sat on her shoulders as if it had been made for her, tickling her nose with the black fur trim. She caught Han's eyes in the mirror behind her and grinned, flushing pink. Han didn't think her shell could break, but there it was.
I had to try one on, she said, indicating the closet. I don't have this many clothes.
Han smiled and watched her, appreciating the figure she cut in the cape. That's a lot of capes.
Maybe too many.
She turned to face him, and her shell was strong again as she became businesslike.
So, what's the plan?
Well, I thought we'd talk a little first, and then... He looked back over his shoulder at Lando's satin-sheeted bed. She rolled her eyes.
For Kessel?
Oh, it's good, he said, hoping he could think of something fast. Her eyes narrowed.
How good?
Foolproof, she sighed, seeing straight through him, like she always could. He didn't have a plan, and she knew it, and she accepted it. And they'd roll with it like they always did. She put the cape on a hanger, and then they both started to speak, and then stopped when they realized they were interrupting each other.
You first,
she said, looking at him through those eyes that could always make his heart pound. I want to tell you, he said, but then stopped. He had no idea. There was too much. A lot.
And I want to know everything that's happened to you since Corellia. I don't think we have that kind of time,
she said, shaking her head slightly. But Han got the sense that she'd rather not talk about it at all. We could, he suggested, stepping forward and taking the cape out of her hands. We can have all the time we want after the job. She looked at him for a long moment, smiling sadly.
I want to.
What do you want? He asked, dropping the cape on the floor behind him. He stepped forward again. She didn't move away.
To tell you everything that's happened to me, she said.
Her voice got softer, with a touch of sadness.
But I know that if I do, you won't look at me the same way, the way you're looking at me right now.
He reached out and touched a lock of her hair, and could smell her, her scent and heat. Some was the scent she'd applied to her skin or hair, but underneath was the old familiar Kira fragrance. Nothing's gonna change the way I look at you, he whispered, both hands on her shoulders now, his eyes holding hers.
You don't know,
she said. She looked distressed, with her secrets needling her.
Han, listen. You don't know what I've had to...
He kissed her, gently. And then when she responded, his passion grew. He wrapped his arms around hers, and she kissed him back as fiercely, turning him around and pushing him against the closet wall. They were surrounded by shimmer silks and furs and exotic fabrics, But nothing could beat the touch of her lips, the feel of her hair. He had dreamed of her kisses every night since he had left her, and yet he had forgotten what it felt like. It was like their first kiss, but they were completely in sync, their desires equally matched. He forgot the ship, the job, his failure at becoming a pilot, her troubles after he had left. The only thing left was Kira, and the fact that he was never letting her go.
"Am I interrupting something?"
a voice asked. They disengaged reluctantly, Kira smoothing her hair and stepping back from Han. He didn't want to let the moment go, but Beckett had to be addressed.
"Kinda," he said pointedly.
"Good,"
Beckett said.
"Glad I got here in time, 'cause we got a lot of work to do. This job ain't gonna be easy."
Kira headed for the door, once again an image of poise and grace. She smiled at Beckett on the way out.
"Relax. Han says it's a great plan," she said. "Foolproof, in fact."
"I said it's gonna be a great plan,"
Han amended as she left the room. "We're just working out some of the details."
"Yeah. Looks like you were working them out real good,"
Beckett said. He also left the room, and Han followed him back to the lounge. Beckett didn't look at Han as he walked, but started speaking.
"Listen, kid, I know we could have a good thing here. You, me, the Wookiee, a solid crew. But it does not work with Kira."
Han bristled. Beckett didn't know how long Han had waited for this moment, to be with Kira, going on adventures, doing what they had always dreamed of. How could he not consider her part of the team?
"What about Val? It worked with her."
Beckett shook his head.
"You want to know how you survive in the game as long as I have? Trust no one. Assume everyone will betray you, and you'll never be disappointed."
"Lovely way to live," Han said, his tongue tasting something like ashes.
"The only way,"
Beckett agreed.
"But there are other ways to get a ship. Maybe you're just not cut out for this kind of work."
Han glared at the older man. Clearly Beckett was more experienced and wiser than Han, but he didn't know Han. He spoke without thinking.
"Maybe if you'd held on to Val a little tighter, then she'd still be here."
Beckett stared at him, his face naked with the emotion still simmering under the surface, and Han worried that he had pushed too far.
"Don't push it, Junior,"
was all Beckett said, his voice stony. As Beckett left, Chewie gave Han a quizzical look.
"What are you looking at?" Han asked testily.
He started it. Lando finished tidying his capes, imagining what had happened, or by the looks of Han and Kira, had almost happened in here. Once everything was where it should be, he surveyed his options. He was tired of yellow. He held a shimmer silk cape in one hand, a gentle grip to keep from crushing the fabric, and surveyed his choices. Red might be better for what he was going for. He stood in front of his closet, the rainbow of colors always pleasing to his eye. People simultaneously admired him for commanding attention in any room he walked into, and scoffed at him for caring too much about his appearance. They failed to see the irony in the sentiment. The short capes were for quick encounters, when he needed both movement and flair, and he wouldn't be meeting, or scamming, someone for longer than a game of sabacc. Longer capes were for a regal atmosphere. You didn't mess with someone in a long cape. Color was key. Lando hadn't studied color at the level of a Coruscant interior designer, but he knew that bright yellow sent a different message than a khaki green. Not that he owned any khaki greens. Bright colors commanded attention, while greens and browns blended into things. Lando did not blend.
He did own a few black capes, but they all had bright linings or trims. And he had one cape the color of old blood. That was one of his favorites. Velvet, with a fur trim, naturally. It was solemn and commanding. Usually the fabric was chosen based on the weather, but not always. Shimmer Silk always showed he had light, easy, complete control of his situation, while capes with woolen linings or fur trim had weight to them and felt like a comforting presence across his shoulders. He didn't explain this to anyone, of course. No one should know that Lando needed a comforting presence, but he couldn't deny the appeal. People had asked, lovers especially, why he had so many, how he chose them, what the big deal was, and even, and this was the funniest part, if they could borrow one. The Wookiee came up behind him. He moved quietly for one so big, but he was still a Wookiee, and quiet for a Wookiee was like saying clean for a hut. Lando turned with a flourish and smiled up at him. "Chewbacca, what can I do for you?" Chewbacca looked at his capes and made soft grunting noises, almost like little barks. Lando frowned. He didn't speak Chewbacca's language fluently, but he did know a few choice words. He had once encountered a Wookiee stylist and had learned the important words like hair and tangle and matted.
"I see," he said.
He took a step closer to Chewbacca and reached out a hand, pausing for a moment. He didn't want to misunderstand what the Wookiee was saying and lose his hand in the fallout.
"May I?" he asked.
Chewie nodded, and Lando ran his hand lightly over his hairy arm. The hair on top was clean, but when his fingers gently dug deeper into the undercoat, he found rough, still tangled hair.
"Oh no, that won't do. Where were you again?"
Chewie growled. Lando made a face.
"Mimban? That planet should not exist.
Mud like that could drive you mad."
Lando rubbed his fingertips together, thinking. The Wookiee looked a lot better than the crew had said he did when they had found him, but his undercoat was still a grimy mess. He hesitated, wondering if he really wanted to know what a Wookiee would do to his shower. Then he said,
"We've got some time in hyperspace if you want to try some of my products. Now, you and I have very different hair, so I'm not sure if I have anything that will work for you. But after I clear out a few of my more..."
He struggled to find words that were not outrageously expensive.
"Personalized products. You are welcome to peruse my supply in the shower."
With a grunt of appreciation, Chewie pushed past him and toward the shower. Before Lando could catch up to him, the door was shut.
I just need to get some of my personal products, Chewbacca,"
he called, then pounded on the door. Water began running in the bathroom, and Chewbacca roared in a way that indicated he didn't want to be interrupted.
"You know, the outrageously expensive ones," Lando said one last time.
Defeated, he looked mournfully at the door, thought about his condition.